Good morning, and welcome back. Welcome back all around. And thank you for the flowers for the bar mitzvah. They were incredible. I don't know if you forwarded the picture that I sent. That was really nice. Okay. Yeah. So, our topic for this morning is Yehuda's Beit Midrash, Shemin Eber's Beit Midrash. Like I said in the email about this, it's really more of an excuse to discuss the Beit Midrash of Shemin Eber than it is Yehuda's per se. But it's a bigger question, which is, who was learning Torah and how do we know that before Har Sinai? Because you learn all these midrashim, you pick it up in school as a kid, they tell you that Yitzchak went to learn after the Akedah, and Yaakov went to learn before going to Laban's house. Where does this come from? What's the evidence for it? What's behind it? What's the idea behind it? And it becomes relevant for the parsha because after Yaakov finds out Yosef is still alive, and he says, I'm going to go down. And then Hashem says to him, don't be afraid to go down to Mitzrayim. Then he sends Yehuda ahead of him. And the pasuk says, "Ve'ez Yehuda shalach lefanav goshna lahoros elech." Lahoros lefanav goshna. He sent Yehuda lahoros or lahoros in front of him to Goshen. What does the word lahorot or lahoros mean? Lamed hevav resh tuf or vav tuf, depending on how you write it. Lehorot. To teach, right. To teach is one explanation for it. The term hora'a in Hebrew is either to teach or to paskin. It's a term that's used for psak. Horasha would be one example. Yoredeya, right? That term. It's the same term. Yoreh. The term for the most basic form of smicha is yoreh. Yoreh, meaning you ask the court, can this person give a ruling? And the answer is yoreh. The person can give a ruling. But aside from psak, again, it is also teaching. The word Torah is from that root. That's where it comes from. It's teaching. So he sends Yehuda lehorot lefanav goshna. What does that mean? Take a look at the first source on the sheet. Right away we see the Medrash. Ve'es Yehuda shalach lefanav. He sent Yehuda before him. Rabbi Chanina breidav achav Rabbi Chanina. Two Rabbi Chaninas have a debate. Chad amar lahaskin lo beis dira. One said lahoros lefanav goshna means he sent him to set up places to live. Lahoros doesn't have to mean to teach. It doesn't have to mean to paskin. It can mean to show the way. That's one possibility. The chadomer, but the other one said no. Lahaskin lo beis vad, to set up a place of vad. Vad suggests gathering at an appointed time, like moed. So a place of gathering. Shehe mora bo divrei Torah, where he, meaning Yaakov, could teach Torah. V'sheyiyu hashvatim lomdim bo, and the shvatim could then learn there. So Yaakov sends Yehuda first to set up a base medrash in Mitzrayim. So it's a nice idea, right? It's on a very basic level, it speaks to the importance of having places to learn Torah. The Rambam actually talks about it in Source 2. We're going to get to this Rambam a little bit later in a broader sense, because this is where the Rambam outlines for us how Torah first was taught. And he writes, the Yaakov Avinu limeid banav kulam. Yaakov taught all of his children. The Hivdi Levi uminahu rosh, and he designated Levi as the head. Voshivo b'yeshiva, he established him in the yeshiva l'lameid derech Hashem, to teach the path of Hashem, v'lishmor mitzvos Abraham, and to keep the mitzvos that Abraham kept. We'll talk about those later. V'siva es banav shalo yafsiku mibnei Levi memuna achar memuna kedei shalo tishachach halimud. And he said, descendants of Levi will always be teachers of Torah. Even though we have a separate tradition about Yisachar's family, that Yisachar's family learned and taught Torah, the Rambam here, basing himself, as we'll see, on various midrashim, says that Levi is the main teacher of Torah at this stage and in this yeshiva that they have in Mitzrayim. But yeah.
Then why would he send Yehuda?
So that's the first question you have to ask, right? So why is he appointing Yehuda to do this? He should appoint Levi to do this. Right, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But broader than that, this base medrash is actually different from the ones that preceded it. I already mentioned in the beginning, right, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eger, that people are familiar with. Shem, son of Noah, and then Eber is great-grandson of Shem. We also have the idea that Abraham teaches people Torah. That's something. Yeshiva, Beis Medrash, Beis Vad, whatever, you know, whatever term you wanna throw on it. But there's actually gonna be a difference between what Yehuda does and what everybody else has done before him. His Beis Medrash doesn't look like all of the predecessors. So those two are sort of the focus questions on Yehuda's Beis Medrash, like why Yehuda instead of Levi if Yehuda is not the teacher Levi is. And number two, what are the differences between what Yehuda does and what's done before? Because we're going to see a major difference. But really, like I said, this topic is really just a way to get to the question of what does it mean that anyone's studying Torah? They haven't received the Torah yet. What are you learning at this point?
Wasn't it more philosophy and... You can't really say Torah because it wasn't given them, but whatever aspects Avram learned, but more was a bunch of people gathering together and just studying philosophy. And when you mentioned in the email, Rivka came, so maybe they were doctors, people who were a little bit more educated and could tell her and guide her. We think, we forecast, you know.
Well, if so, she got a very strange answer from the doctors. Right.
Yeah.
The ultrasound is older. There are twins, right? The
success, philosophers, whatever it might
right.
be, but
right.
educated people.
Right. So I want to get to the question of what they learned as well as part of this, and looking at it not just as a sort of philosophical question of well, what would they have learned, but through the evidence, like the example that you give. Well, Rivka goes to seek God, and she gets some kind of guidance, so that maybe gives me some sense of what it is that's going on there, what they're doing. The Malbim says they were Nevi'im, Shem and Eber. They talk to Hashem. On the one hand, that sort of answers the question, I guess, of where the Torah came from that was learned. On the other hand, it opens up a whole bunch more problems. Because that's not normally how we learn Torah. You don't learn Torah from a Navi, right? Torah is given to us to learn, and in fact, Nevi'im don't have any say, meaning Torah is given to us. It's not for the Navi to say, well, this is what Hashem says. It's supposed to be, there's a text, and you learn it, and you discuss it, and you debate it, and there's halacha, and it's like, I don't know what's happening at this stage. So let's get a little bit further into the topic, and then come back to the question of what they're learning. And I want to start with Shem and Eber. Again, Noah has three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yafes, and then Shem's son. Well, Shem has multiple, but one of them is Arpachshad, and then Arpachshad has a son Shelah, and Shelah has a son Eber. And then eventually you get down to Reu and so on down the line until you get to Abraham. So Shem and Eber are identified in the Medrash already as leaders in their time, even before you get to anything about them having yeshiva. Take a look at source number 3. This is a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. A lot of what we're going to say is either Psukim out of Sefer Bereishis or Midrashim in Bereishis Rabbah. So, this Medrash tells us about what happened in the days of Abraham and before. And it's Abraham speaking. The pasuk that it's commenting on is when Abraham describes how Hashem took him out of his house. He's explaining to Paro why he told him that Sarah was his sister instead of saying Sarah was his wife. So he gives a whole backstory, and this is part of what Abraham says, as the Medrash explains it. When the nations wanted to stray from God's ways, he set up two great people as their leaders, Mishal Beis Abba, from my father's house, meaning my ancestral line. Shem ve'Eber. Those two, Vayumashim Bahem, and they warned people. They told people when what they were doing was wrong. As a matter of fact, there's a linked medrash that says that Shem and Eber are the ones who defend Abraham from Nimrod. Nimrod wants to kill Abraham, and Shem and Eber are the ones who weigh in to prevent it. So that's your first appearance of Shem and Eber having any kind of religious role in Midrash. The truth of the matter is, as we're going to see, we know more about a religious role for Shem. Right? It's not just from this statement of Abraham that's reported in the Medrash. Where else do we know Shem has a religious role? From Sukkim. Uh-oh. Alright, well, we're going to have to come back to it. But he absolutely has a religious identity explicit in the Chumash. Not like hidden, veiled reference, deduction, whatever. The Torah says explicit. You're close. One pasuk off. The pasuk. Yeah, unfortunately, the pasuk you want is the one before it. That's the hard thing to do. But yes. If you want, you can scroll down on the source sheet and you'll see it. But okay, you'll see Shem and Abe are identified that way, and it's linked to Abraham. Yitzchak and Rivka are both associated with the yeshiva of Shem and Abe. They're specifically after the Akedah. Right? After the Akedah, Yitzchak does not come back with Abraham. And we know he doesn't come back with Abraham, because the Pasuk actually says it. The Pasuk says, after the Akedah, Vayashav Abraham el Ne'arav. Abraham went back to the Ne'arim who had accompanied them to the Akedah. And Yitzchak isn't there. And not only that, Yitzchak isn't there in the next story. Right? What's the story after the Akedah? Sarah's death. Abraham buries Sarah. Yitzchak is nowhere to be found. Where is Yitzchak? Why isn't he around? The Medrash gives us an answer. Source number 4. Vayashav Abraham al Ne'arav. Abraham went back to his youths. They, assuming Ne'arim are youths, we've discussed Na'ar elsewhere. Vayitzchak heichan hu. So knew where was Yitzchak. Rabbi Brechia b'shem Rabbanan d'taman. So Rabbi Brechia quotes the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael to say, Shalchu Eitzel Shem. He sends him to Shem. Lilmo Rimenu Tzara. I'm actually not convinced, come to think of it, that Rabbanan Taman is from Israel. Because Gracious Rabbi, I think, is actually canonized in Israel, in which case Taman would be Babel. So it might be the Babylonian Chacham. I'm not sure. But in any case, either way, he sent Yitzchak to learn from Shem. Lilmo Rimenu Tzara. Mashal Isha Shinis Ashray Pilchan. The Medrash goes on to say, this is like a case in which a woman becomes wealthy from weaving. And she says, I'm never going to stop weaving. Even though now I don't need to, nonetheless, I'm going to persist in weaving because it helped me. So too, Abraham says, Kol Shabali Adi, Eino Ela Bishvil Shasakti B'Torah V'Mitzvos. Abraham says, everything I got through Torah and Mitzvos. Everything Hashem has given me came from this. Lefichach Eino Rotze Shetazuz Mizari Li'Olam. It's probably a typo and should be Eini. He says, I don't want Torah to leave me, to leave my family forever. So therefore, I'm going to send him to Shem in order to get it. What's odd about this? Yeah. Isn't Abraham a teacher of Torah? Right? Declaring the name of God, bringing people to God. Why does Abraham need to send him to Shem and Aver?
Maybe it was
10
after the
Akedah. Well, maybe somebody else should teach him.
It's a little hard.
Why does he need? I mean, really, is that it? Like the dynamic isn't so great right now.
Maybe. Oh, Abraham was busy.
Yeah. Abraham was busy. That's a good one. Abraham.
I mean,
Abraham,
that's what it is for today's babies, right? You send your children to school. Yeah. Why don't you teach them?
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, I would go back to the first reason for why I would teach them.
Well, tense.
The.
Different things from different people.
The. Right. So the answer could be that you need to get, from others as well. The Yafei Tower commentary on the Medrash says maybe Shem was a little sharper than Abraham. Maybe Shem had people who had learned from Abraham who were with him, so you could get Abraham's teaching that way, and you could also get, what Shem has to say. The answer may also be, if you look at the language of the Medrash, it's like a legacy thing that Abraham is trying to pass on. It's not just like information. It's everything I received came this way. And I want to make sure you get it. And maybe he feels like an outsider's perception is valuable. Having somebody else who has seen what the house of Abraham does be the one to convey it may have special value. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. But it's a remarkable thing. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has an interesting idea, not on Yitzchak going there, but on Yaakov going there, which we'll get to. which may give another slant on it. I think his view is difficult, but we'll at least present it.
When it says Shem Ve'Eved, does it actually mean them or just their yeshiva?
So it does seem to mean them, and I say that because when you get to the next generation, and if you do the math, you realize Shem is already dead, the Midrashim only talk about the base Midrash of Eber. They drop Shem from it. So it really sounds like it means
them. And Eber was what's his name?
Great-grandson. Yeah. So yeah, it does seem like it's them personally.
So he was older than Avram, so it's also like
so maybe he has
experience him or, you know.
Right. Whatever it is that
he'll do. Like maybe he needed to be like strapped up like that influences, it's coming from Shmuel, he should be
a good chevra.
Shame is not his own age.
Yeah. Shame, maybe it wasn't yeshiva there. So it's like,
so that's part of the question is who else is there learning with?
Right, we don't hear anyone else.
That's a very important question we're going to have to come back to is who's his chavrusa? Who is he learning with in yeshiva Shem Ve'Eved? So we have to talk about that.
All the people in that genealogical list who were tzaddikim. Maybe
right, so there are midrashim. There are midrashim that talk about other people within the line being special. Lemeth is one, Mr. Shalach is another, but it never spreads to like their other, you know, branches. Anonymous children who are just banim ubanot as far as they're recorded.
And
gracious.
Why not?
So the Kuzari believes, and others believe, that it's because the others weren't special. It was just this line.
But they weren't special. They didn't learn in yeshiva. They weren't special.
Yes.
They weren't like they didn't practice.
They did not carry on
this monotheism or whatever.
Correct. That seems to be the idea. Mm-hmm. So the just to show you though, take a look at number 5 because this was Yitzchak, Rivka as well. Batelech Lidrosh es Hashem. Look at this medrash, because this medrash is going to be a problem. She went to seek out God. V'chibatei knesios u'batei midrashos hayu ba'osen hayamim. I added in the word open in the English translation. It's not in the Hebrew. We're there, batei knesios, which we think of as shuls, but here it doesn't necessarily mean that, places of gathering. Were there batei medrash? Were there places of study back in the day? The assumption is no, that's what they say it. Vahalolo halcha elal medrash shel shem ve'ever. She went to the medrash of, short for Beit Midrash, of shem and ever. I don't understand what that medrash just said. Are there, after you finish reading that line, are there or are there not but a medrash?
But she went to that one.
So there was. So in other words, I would have thought she went to see God means she went to the. She went to some open place, and in fact, it's not so. She went to the one of Shem and Eber. In other words, there's something unique here. This isn't an open study hall. When Rivka's having trouble, she's pregnant, she doesn't know why she's suffering in this pregnancy so much. She says, I have to talk to God. I would have thought she went to some open place where you just learn.
Wasn't she herself in Leah?
So this... Right, so there is a discussion there, but this is usually what's brought actually as
the proof that she's not.
The, as the proof that she is. No, that Lidrosh Hashem is somehow personally with her. There's a whole thing in the Medrash about whether God spoke to her directly. Right, so that's part of the discussion in the Medrash. Is this via them? Is it they enable it? Or is it really, you know, direct to her? Lidrosh Hashem, and then the next pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem La, God said to her, sounds like it's personal. That's where the Gemara takes it, is that it's actually personal.
So it still doesn't answer the question why she went to Shem Ve'Eved. She could have just like gone to a shul.
Right. And the answer is, there were none. Shem and Eber. That's what the Medrash is saying. There were none. So the Medrash is the answer is, she goes to Shem and Eber, and that's it. Now, that's Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak after the Akedah. Rivka when she's pregnant and doesn't know what's going on. And then she gets this wonderfully comforting message. Yeah, your kids are fighting and they're always going to fight. But don't worry, one of them is going to be stronger than the other. And then the next generation is when it explodes in the Medrash. And that's where you see it with Yaakov and Esav. So I brought you a bunch of Midrashim. Recognizing that there's a lot of text here, I'm not going to read them all out individually, but you can see them. Number 6 is... in the same medrash as number 5, the same one that says they did not have have Batei Medrash. They did not have Batei Knesset. Number six says, you've heard this, you learned this in school at some point, that when she was pregnant, when Rivka was pregnant, when she stood at the entrance of houses of gathering and houses of study, Yaakov would start moving around like he wants to get out. Pirkus, the term that's used here, is a term that's often used for like involuntary motion. It's a description that's used, for example, if someone please don't do this, but if someone cuts off the tail of a lizard, they
like you have an epileptic attack.
Right, so it's used there. That's modern Hebrew usage. I was going sort of classic, but yes, the involuntary motions, you know, that go on. That's called lefarkes. It's the same idea. So Yaakov isn't thinking at this point, but he starts shifting around to leave. And they quote a pasuk in Yirmiyahu about how Hashem knew Yirmiyahu before he was even born, when he was in the womb. U'bishah shahaisa overes al batei avodas kochavim, but when she passes avodas zara, then Esav is the one who wants to leave, and quotes a pasuk from Tehillim about how people can be wicked even from the womb, which is very problematic philosophically in Judaism. Yes, nonetheless, what the Medrash here is trying to tell us is there is something, some place where Torah is being learned. There's some kind of a Beit Midrash, even though the other part of the Medrash says there isn't any. It's the same Medrash. So the Yafei Tawar, in his commentary here, tries to deal with it by saying maybe Batei Knesset means places where people gather for good purposes, to do mitzvot. And Batei Midrash is where they go to teach a lesson that they learned in the Yeshiva of Eder. That's the Yafei Tawar's way of dealing with it. But this Medrash presupposes that there is some place where people are learning, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Clear?
Can you not read number five differently to say that there are?
So if that were the end of the Medrash, I would say yes. But in other words, I could have read it as V'halolo ha'ala, the Medrash Hashem Be'er. Doesn't that show that there were?
Right.
And then you fall off a cliff. There's nothing else. Yeah, in other words, then there should be a next sentence. If it meant it as, there must be, I mean, the Mefarshim don't take it that way, but even, you know, I understand the reason to read it that way. The word Bahalo is usually a question word, and it would seem to fit.
And there's no answer to the question.
Yeah.
Or number six answers number five. It says, she only went, that means there were others, and six answers that by saying that there were idol worshiping, there were different types of yeshiva.
Right, the only challenge is that six is actually before five in the Medrash. I flipped the order because because the first one is about Rivka and the second one is about, you know, later in the pregnancy, but they're actually flipped in the Medrash.
Could it be like the word hello, like it is a question, but it also could be almost like incredulous.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Medrash itself is surprised that she went there.
But how would you read the sentence? Like, what would your translation be then?
The same way, but almost like with an exclamation mark at the end.
Yeah, I don't want to draw it the halalohofa el Medrash Hashem Be'er. And she only goes to the Yeshiva Hashem Be'er, meaning there were others.
But where did it say that there were others then, if you read it that way?
Ella, like, if you're only going to that one,
But then what's it?
Going to that store, how is it, there weren't other stores to go to.
How is it getting that from Batelech Lidrosh Es Hashem? In other words, this is a commentary on the Pasuk. Right? So the Pasuk says she went to seek Hashem, and you're reading it as there were plenty of other places, but she only went to Shem and Eber?
Yeah. No, or it could be that she didn't go to any other place. She didn't go to the river or the field or whatever to get that inspiration. She went to...
But then what's that middle phrase? I mean, the key word is really the v'chi. V'chi is a question word that sets you up with,
right.
But were there?
There must have been other places.
She
chose only to go to Shane Maver.
Yeah.
I think it's a hard read.
Yeah,
I don't think that fits the Hebrew. I mean, the English is mine. The English is my translation, so don't be biased by that. But I don't...
So you're saying when she would kick, when Yitzhak would...
would kick it was just by chance ever.
Right, Yaakov is the kicker. Let's be clear. So yes. Unless you retranslate Batei Knesset and Batei Midrash the way the Yafei Tohar does, and he says it really isn't. You know, Batei Knesset is people gathered for mitzvos, and Batei Midrash is where people are retelling what Eber said. Yeah. I think it's difficult. I hear the other attempts to read it. I'm not sold. But we'll see more on this. The next one that you bring is, of course, when Yaakov is born, and we're told that he is Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshiv Ohalim. Right? Tam is not simple. Tam is without blemish. Right? Esav is the hunter, and Yaakov is the one who is without blemish, Yoshev Ohalim. He sits in tents, and what the Medrash is bothered by is the word Ohalim. What tents? What does that mean? He has a tent. He lives in a tent. What does it mean, dweller of tents? And so it tells us, don't worry, Beit Midrasho Shel Shem, Beit Midrasho Shel Eber. He, as he's growing up, is learning in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eber, although that conflicts with the Medrash.
Wasn't it one tent? Like it together?
Also, yeah.
So, apparently not.
Like Hillel and
Shammai? Well, it's great-grandfather, great-grandson. You know, one lives here, one lives there. It wasn't Toronto, where everybody lives on the same street.
You would think if there's only one Yeshiva with, like, four Talmidim, they would be in one tent.
Also, they're always great-grandfather.
Right. And apparently not. I mean, that's what it's suggesting. You have multiple.
One second, but it's always grouped together, Shane Weaver. Ripka goes to seek out. She goes to Shane Weaver at one place.
Right. And this measure doesn't sound like it. Yeah. Right. Sorry.
I'm very anxious that we're not going to make it to the end.
And we can continue a topic next week. I don't want to, you know. Okay. So if you take a look at number 8, by Yigdalu HaNe'arim, we're told that they matured, and we're told now that for 13 years they went to school together. Then, after they turned 13, by Yigdalu HaNe'arim, they became Bar Mitzvah. So now, one went to the Batei Medrash, houses of study, the other one goes to Batei Avodas Kohavim, goes to idolatry. So, again, the idea that there are Batei Medrash, and then the Gemara and Megillah in source number 9. So, in order not to confuse things with the way that the Gemara presents the years, I'm going to present it outside of the text. We're trying to figure out Yaakov's age. We know that Yaakov tells Paro he's 130 years old. That we know. And he complains. That we know as well. But you know he says he's 130. So we try to go backward and figure out how that works. And we start out with the idea that he is 63 when he leaves the house of Rivka and Yitzchak. He leaves home at the age of 63. How the Gemara gets that isn't for us right now. We also know that he works for 14 years before Yosef is born. 7 years that he gets Leah, then he marries Rachel, and then he works for another 7 years. And at that point he says, when Yosef is born, now I'd like to get paid because I've reached the end of the work I had to do. And then he spends another 6 years with Laban trying to get paid. So he is 77 when Yosef is born. That's the key. Because Yosef is 30 when he gets to Paro. So at that point Yaakov should be 107. Right? Then you have 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine. So that's 9 more years. That's 116. And then he comes down to Paro. And he says, I'm 130. You're missing 14 years. Something didn't work right. Again, he's 63 when he leaves home. We know that he spends 14 years before Yosef is born working for Rachel and working for Leah. Right? So that's 77. Yosef is 30 when he goes to Paro. So that means Yaakov is 107. And then another 9 years, which is explicit in the Torah, we're told that. That says, Zeshna Saim Harav Karev Haaretz.
He translates the dreams?
He's 30 when he translates the dreams, correct. So you have another 9 years. That means that he's 116. But you're missing 14 years. What do you do?
He go to Shane Baber after he left his father after the
So that's this Gemara. That's what this Gemara says in source number 9. It's the answer is he spent 14 years in the house of Eber. Right? Shame is gone by now. So for sure this is a separate thing at this point. And those are not enumerated. Those don't count. And when there's the whole discussion about Yaakov being punished, why didn't he contact his parents and go visit his parents and so on, he's not punished for the years he was in the yeshiva of Eber. Those he gets away with.
He was 77 when he got married.
He would have been 63 and then 7 plus 7 because of the 7 years of working. So he's 70.
So, but when did he do the 14 years? Before he was...
Oh, I'm sorry. Right, right. No, that's a good point. Right. No, you're right. You're right, because now we're assuming that he's 77 when he shows up at Lovin's house. He's actually 84 when he gets married.
When he gets married, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
See, the 14 years happened before. That's
so why is there such a rush for kids to get married so
why is he still running yeshiva? Wait, I thought he married right when he gets there.
Yeah, he married Leah right away.
He married him right away.
Then he
worked
for 14 years.
He married them after 7 years. He married after 7 years. He works for 7 years. And then he marries both 1 week apart, and then he works another 7 years.
Not 7 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Those pictures
are
so much longer.
Yeah, because she's so upset.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. But yes, it seems, yeah, well, when you compare it to Sarah and you compare it to Rivka,
right,
you know, where, well, they weren't married for 8 years.
Were the wives much younger?
It was 20 years.
Were the wives much younger? We don't really know. We don't have any evidence to work from. We're not told how old they were when they died. We're not told how old, yeah, we don't know. Okay, so Yaakov learns in the house of Eber, and here is where Yaakov Kamenetsky makes his comment about what they're learning in the yeshiva. He wants to know why Yaakov had to learn in the yeshiva of Shem Eber, in the yeshiva of Eber at this point, and he floats the idea that Yaakov needs to learn the Torah of Golus. He needs to learn. He's leaving Israel, going to the house of Lavan. He needs to know how to deal with a Lavan. So therefore, he has to learn there what he can't learn from Yitzchak. I find that perplexing for two reasons. First of all, because we've seen a Medrash that says he was learning with Eber already earlier, with Yoshev Ohalim, number one. But number two, Yitzchak grew up with Yishmael. Abraham grew up in a world where he had no one. Like, why do you need to go? So I find that answer to be difficult. But that leads to our question, which is, so what were they learning? The Rambam writes in source number 10 from his introduction to his Perush HaMishnayos, his commentary to the Mishnah, he's talking about what was around as Torah in those days, and he says specifically, "Bizman Shem ve'Eber v'sha'achareihem," in the time of Shem and Eber and their successors, Shalohai sahalacha b'li safek. He says there was no halacha. He says without a doubt there is no halacha for them to learn. So that's the question. So what exactly are they learning? Chaim Kanievsky has a collection of comments of his that relate to the parsha. And if you ever read anything at all from him, or if you ever read in like interviews with him, you have to know people ask him questions that go on for like a paragraph or two, and then he gives you one sentence as his response. Sicha Rav Kanievsky, he's asked this question. It's a few line question, and his answer is Yirat Shamayim. That's what they learned. They learned reverence for Hashem. I don't know what that means. The
philosophy.
Philosophy is reverence for Hashem?
No, yeah, well, you discuss the concept of having a God.
Yeah.
And
that's what they do all day long?
Reverence for Hashem.
That counts?
I mean, I don't know.
They do something.
They don't talk about those things.
People do. Because they were self-intuitive from Yahriya or
Shem and Eber.
No, the others, right?
So no, he asked, their question was Shem and Eber.
Like when we say the Avram educated people, what did he tell them? What was Avram's speech? When he used to go and
well,
educate
that's part
people,
of what
believe
we need
in
to
God.
Know.
What was his speech? It was 3 minutes? Like, believe in God, there had to have been a God to create the world? That's it?
I don't know. But that's why I'm asking this question.
Right.
What are they doing? I mean, all day long? Like, you come home and somebody says, so what did you do today in yeshiva? But to spend your entire, like, existence? Shem and Eber for 14 years, we're told that Yaakov, same Gemara, says that Yaakov didn't sleep in yeshiva Shem and Eber for 14 years. His whole time? I mean, like, Mr. Seder and yeshiva is 15 minutes a day. They maybe it should be more. But like, what did you do?
What is the world a microcosm of Torah? So if you know the world intimately enough, you can infer Torah from it.
But that's not what he says they're doing. He says they're learning Yiras Shamayim.
I think that's a pretty good concept.
They learn Mesilas Yisharim.
But Mesilas Yisharim is about working on yourself and on your attributes.
And you're saying that this is unrelated to the self.
I mean, everything connects to Yiras Hashem. But to say that was what they were... I find this very challenging. I find it to be difficult. And even if Avraham and his family observe mitzvahs, which we are going to come back to, the Rambam doesn't think that Shem and Eber are doing that. He says explicitly there is no halacha in their day. So what exactly is it that they're doing? This is very difficult. Not to mention the question of where the yeshiva even is.
Maybe they were coming up with all that stuff that they weren't practicing it, but they were like talking about it.
Maybe.
Like a wise man, not like an old man.
Like back when they had wise men, yes. We have a lot more to see. So the other question, which I just to mention, is the question of where this place was. Right? Shame, we are told, lived in Yerushalayim, because the Medrash says Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem is Shame, and he's in Yerushalayim. So Yeshiva of Shame has to be in Yerushalayim. On the other hand, the Maharshan, the Gemara in Megillah, suggests that that Eber's Yeshiva was in Be'er Sheva. He has a few reasons for saying so, but most basically, because the Pasuk says that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and went to Haran. If he stopped off in Yerushalayim, then you have to say so. Right, so Avram goes back to Be'er Sheva. Maybe he's going to another part of Be'er Sheva, or maybe he's going to Yerushalayim. He's going to Yerushalayim. Very difficult. That's all Shem and Eber. What about Avraham and Yitzchak? So there, the Gemara in Yuma, in source number 11, tells us that our ancestors always had yeshiva. That when they were in Mitzrayim, they had yeshiva. When they were in Midbar, they had yeshiva. And the way you know it is because they had zakenim. You had elders. And the word zaken is taken by the Gemara to mean not only people who are old, but people who are accomplished in their learning. And so it says that every time you see Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov described as zaken, it means that they learned. They sat and learned. That's the way that they take it. That Gemara is going to be very important for us. Keep that Gemara in mind. The Rambam describes what they did in Avraham's yeshiva. Look at his description in number 12. This is the larger piece from which I took what I brought you in number 2. The Rambam writes, I'm going to just read the English just for time reasons, but you can see the Hebrew as well. The Tzur Olamin, another name for Hashem. No man recognized or knew him. Only lone individuals like Chanoch, Mesushalach, Noach, Shem and Eber. The world went along and evolved like this until the pillar of the world, Avraham, was born. And since the masses gathered to him and asked him, meaning Avraham, about his words, he informed each one according to his personality until he brought that person to the path of truth. To the point that thousands and myriads gathered to him, and these were, quote, Anshei Beis Avraham, the men of the house of Avraham. And he planted in their hearts this great principle and composed books about, meaning the belief in God, composed books about it and told it to his son Yitzchak. And Yitzchak sat and taught and instructed, and Yitzchak told it to Yaakov and appointed him to teach, and he sat and taught and strengthened all who joined him. And Yaakov taught all of his children, and he separated Levi, and that's where you get what I brought you in the beginning, that he made Levi the teacher in Mitzrayim. So you have this idea that basically what they're learning is, what they're learning from Avraham is, the existence of Hashem. And maybe we should back apply that and say that also is what's going on in Shem and Eber. They're learning about the existence of God, broader than Yiras Shamayim, right? And maybe preliminary to Yiras Shamayim is the sense that there is a Shamayim, the idea that there is a God. And maybe that's really what Shem and Eber are doing as well. It's certainly what the Rambam thinks that Avraham is doing, that Yitzchak is doing. They're promoting knowledge of the existence of Hashem. So here we go. What were these Batei Medrash meant to accomplish? What was this all about? So first of all, we have to look at the reasons why we believe there was such a yeshiva. Meaning we've seen a bunch of Midrashim. But what is this really coming from? And the answer is that there are three major reasons why we believe that these yeshivot existed. First of all, storyline, meaning the stories of our ancestors don't make sense without them. I'll explain what I mean. Number two, there are textual issues that you can resolve if you have a place of study, and I'll explain what that means. And philosophically, it makes sense. First storyline. So here we get the pasuk that was right before what Chayla said before. Number 13. After Noach is exposed in his tent, right, and Shem covers him up, look what he says. Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. Blessed is God, is Hashem, he thanks God, the God of Shem. What do you mean the God of Shem? He's the God of Noach. Why does Noach call him the God of Shem? Isn't that really strange? The answer has to be, and this is the textual reason, then for saying there's a base medrash, there has to be a religious identity to Shem, or the pasuk doesn't make any sense. You follow? Why call him the God of Shem? Everybody else calls him either the God of themselves, right? Elokai, Eloki, you know? Or they say, God of my ancestors. He says, God of my son? What does that even mean? The answer is, Shem has an identity like this. Similarly, in source number 14, Malki Tzedek, who might be Shem, but even if he's not, look what it shows you. Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, brings bread and water to Avraham, and he is just bread and wine, excuse me, to Avraham. It would have been less fun if it was bread and water. V'hu Kohen L'Kel Elyon, and he is described as a priest for God. Lest one think this is an Avodah Zarah, it's a priest for idolatry, I will ask you, so why is Avraham sitting down to bread and wine with him? That doesn't seem to fit at all with the identity of Avraham. The Avraham is the same Avraham when the same section is going to say, I don't want to take any wealth because, you know, everything I get comes from Hashem. So, Kohen L'Kel Elyon has to mean this is a priest of Hashem.
Did it ever call Hashem Kel Elyon?
Yeah, Hashem is Kel Elyon quite a few times. So again, textual evidence that someone knows something about Hashem before Avraham and separate from Avraham. Shem first, Elokei Shem. Malki Tzedek, who may be the same person, as the Midrash tries to suggest. And then you go further along. Number 15, I apologize for not translating the psukim. I just figured if you have a chumash, then you can look it up, and I could save a little bit of time. But in source number 15, when Hashem's going to destroy Sodom, he says, I'm going to tell Avraham about the destruction of Sodom. Why am I telling him? Ki zativ, which is either because I know Avraham or because I love Avraham, either way. L'man ashei tzaves banaves based on Achrab. He is going to command his children and his household afterwards to guard the path of Hashem. How's that going to happen if there isn't some means, again, of teaching it? And then the famous pasuk in number 16, the one that is the basis for saying that Avram fulfilled mitzvot, Hashem says, I'm giving wealth to the family, I'm giving support to the family, Egev asher shama Avraham bekoli, because Avram listened to my voice, and he guarded, vayishmor, mishmarti, he guarded my preserve, mitzvosai, chukosai, and sorosai, my mitzvos, my laws, my teachings, Avraham observed all of them. So that tells me that there's something going on, and that's where the Gemara says, see that? He must be doing mitzvos, otherwise what does this even mean? It's the same passage that tells us that he sat and he learned. And then finally, Yoshev Ohalim, the description of Yaakov, which we already discussed as a dweller of tents. So those are storyline reasons. Meaning, I don't understand otherwise why Noach calls Shem, calls God the God of Shem. I don't understand otherwise who this priest of God is. I don't understand how Abraham can convey this to his descendants and fulfill the teachings. There has to be a place of study or the story doesn't make sense. That's number one. Number two, the text itself. Like the pasuk we already quoted in number 18, that Abraham leaves the Akedah alone, as an example. Or, like number 19, do you notice what Avram is called there? This is after the war of the four kings versus the five kings. The palit, the refugee, leaves the battlefield and he comes and tells who? Avram ha-Ivri. What does the name Ivri come from? So, sorry, it was came from Eber or?
Eber
HaYardin. So Eber HaYardin would be really difficult because Avram is not from Eber HaYardin. Avram's from Aram. Right? No Eber HaYardin there. So take a look at source number 20, where in fact actually find three different views in the Medrash to explain the word Ivri. One view is that it's actually Eiver meaning side. The whole world is on one Eiver and he is on the other. The whole world is on one side, Avram is on the other side. Then the second view is he's of the descendants of Eiver. And then the third view is that he came from the side of the river, but the river would be the Euphrates, not the Yarden. When the pasuk says Yeshua be'Eiver Hanahar Yeshua Botechem Me'olam, that's not talking about the Yarden. That's talking about the Euphrates. So that's your third approach. But within the view that it's the descendant of Eiver, why would you call Avram the descendant of Eiver? He's the descendant of Shem. He's the descendant of Reu. Like, why are you calling him the descendant of Eiver? Unless you say there's something special about Eiver. He's not just random guy. He's something more than that. Such as he is the one who takes on the mantle of teaching Torah. Another piece in the psukim that is solved if you have a baby drasha is again Yitzchak's absence in number 21 at the burial of Sarah. The age of Yaakov that didn't add up is solved again if you posit there's a place for him to go for 14 years. And finally, the pasuk we started with in number 22, that he sends Yehuda to Lahorot Lefanav Goshen. The word Lahorot really doesn't mean to build a house. Lahorot is so often about teaching. So you have a lot of textual problems that you can resolve if you say there was a Beit Midrash. And then finally, philosophically, number 23, the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, commenting on a pasuk from Habakkuk. The Gemara itself is problematic on a number of levels and requires explanation, but I'm borrowing just one piece of it from this Gemara, where it says that Hashem looked at the seven mitzvahs that the Noahites accepted and did not fulfill. Right? The Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noah. The mitzvahs that apply to all human beings. And the Gemara assumes that the non-Jews actually accepted these mitzvahs. When did they accept them? When was there ever an acceptance of the mitzvah b'nei Noach? It doesn't. I don't understand what you're talking about. Maybe. I mean, we have no reference to it, nor do we have any reference to them teaching it. Right? The Gemara tries to deduce the mitzvahs b'nei Noach, and it actually reads six of them into Hashem speaking to Adam. The pasuk says, "Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al ha'adam." Vayitzav means dinim, that you have a mitzvah of setting up courts. Because Vayitzav is, and he commanded. Like, a court would have laws. Like, it's a sort of drasha which, if you read the Gemara, say, oh, okay, fine. But if you didn't, you don't know how in the world, you know, the nations were expected to follow Noahide laws. So from a philosophical perspective, if you believe that the nations are somehow obligated in these mitzvahs that are for all humanity, right? Don't kill, don't steal, don't worship idols, don't blaspheme against God. If you believe that they have these as commandments, you have to believe that there was some mechanism of teaching it. And again, I would argue that that's what Shem and Eber are doing. It's mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Not to mention the source number 24, which tells us that there has to be the study of Torah. If not, the world is going to have no reason for existing. Well, someone must have been doing something all that time, assuming you take that as a literal statement. The Rambam wasn't so sure.
And how do you say Avram was the first one to discover Torah?
And the answer is? Good question. What's the answer? He's not. He's not the first one. What Abraham does do that the others do not is that Abraham discovers it on his own. He's the one who is credited for figuring it out. Apparently, Abraham doesn't go to Yeshiva Shem Behavior. And he hung out somewhere else. Shem gets it from Noah, who had direct conversations with God. Hashem speaks to Noah. And they're all descendants, but Abraham does not. Abraham doesn't get it that way. Abraham is, well, Terach before him, but yeah. So what we get here is this, and I really, I'm looking at your watch. I see it's 11:30, or you were going to rush fast.
11:25.
Okay, I was here at 10:25. Okay. So going back to this, then, what we see here is this. There was a sense of religiosity, communication with God, conveying of Mesorah that goes back to the time of Noah. You have some sense that there is something, Elokei Shem, and so on. You have a text that leaves us with questions that are answered if there's a place of study where people actually went. And it's consistent with our sense of the place of Torah in the world in general. The idea that they had mitzvot that they accepted and so on. All of this leads us to assume there have to be batei medrash, there have to be yeshivot. And what they're for, it seems, is not mass batei medrash. It's not that the world is sitting and studying and learning and starting to absorb the mitzvot that Abraham is personally practicing. The evidence of that is simply that number one, Abraham and his family would not have been necessary. Right? If you had mass batei medrash, you wouldn't need them. And number two, where are they? When we go down to Mitzrayim, no one's going with us. It's just the family. So it seems like it's not them. It's just, it's really more about us. And in fact, what the Rambam said, going back to our source about shame in source number 12, was the Rambam said there were yechidim, lone individuals, who were doing this. These weren't big public study halls. You didn't even have, go back to that medrash that I quoted, you didn't have open study rooms. What you had was a tent where Shane sat and learned. And a tent where Aver sat and learned. And maybe they were together at some point, and maybe not. But these were relatively private. And Abraham and Yitzchak, even though they spread things to the world, the primary focus for Abraham is, as the Rambam said, he gives it to his son Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is teaching people, but the primary focus is he gives it to his son Yaakov. Evidence for the last source that I quoted here talks about how Yaakov wants evidence that Yosef is really alive. And he says to the brothers, tell me, what was the last thing that I learned with Yosef? Right? He says, because then I'll know that Yosef must have told you. I don't understand. Why wouldn't the brothers know what was learned in the base medrash if they were all learning together? The answer is, they weren't all learning together. Learning until that point was one-on-one. Yaakov and Yosef learned together. The others were not in on it. That's why this is such an important point of, do you know what he learned with me? So what you now see then is that there are two differences. Number one, two questions. Why is Yehuda the one leading the base medrash instead of Levi? And number two, the question of why does Yaakov say, now I'm making one for all the Shvatim, everyone is going to come learn together. So what I would suggest is the following. You could say that change in milieu, change in numbers, we have to do things differently. Meaning, in Canaan, we were small families, and we lived away from the big populations of Hebron, Beersheba, Grar, and children learned from their parents, and that was it. In Mitzrayim, even if you're off in Goshen, you're subject to the influences of greater Egyptian society, and and you're going to need to counter that strong influence. And all of the kids of the Shvatim, you're now three generations down, have to learn together the message of Avraham and Sarah. So therefore, there's a need to make a broader yeshiva environment. That doesn't explain why it's Yehuda. But I would float another idea, which is that Yaakov sees a need to develop new leaders. He's not just looking for the spreading of Torah to the descendants, but you need leaders. Because in earlier times, you had Noah, you had Shem, you had Aver, and the Midrashim tell us they acted as authorities. They told the generation what to do. They defended Abraham from Nimrod. They explained the family legacy to Yitzchak. They answered Rivka's questions about her pregnancy. But by the time Yaakov's family descends to Mitzrayim, the old leaders are gone, and new authorities have to come from within. So we have a choice: make each family do it separately and come up with its own leaders, or create a joint base medrash where they're going to discuss, they're going to debate, and people will emerge the way they emerge in the context of yeshiva. In yeshiva, leaders emerge when they're recognized by their peers as being leaders. That's what they do. Which is why the Gemara in Yuma that I said you had to keep in mind says that how do you know they had yeshiva in Mitzrayim? Because that's where the Zakenim came from. The 70 Zakenim, the elders who Moshe gathers in Egypt, come from that yeshiva. That's where you developed authority. That's where you developed leadership. And I think that's why it's Yehuda. Because Yehuda is the best thing they have as a leader at this point. Yehuda is the one who defended Binyamin to Yosef. He was the one who put himself on the line. He thought Binyamin was a thief. They all thought Binyamin was a thief. He was found with the king's goblet in his bag. Right? Or the giant man's goblet in his bag. And the king, or the viceroy, is willing to say, you guys all go home. I'm just going to keep Binyamin as a slave. And Yehuda is the one who says, take me instead, send him home. That is leadership. And that's the one for whom the so Yaakov says, okay, you're the ones who established the Beis Medrash. And over time, Levi will become the teacher. Because Levi is going to demonstrate his own authority in the course of the development of this Beis Medrash. But that hasn't happened yet. Levi hasn't done anything yet besides being part of the plan to kill Yosef and being one of the two who killed out Shem. That's not what Yaakov's looking for here. So Levi has to grow into the role. You follow? That to me is what's going on with this Beis Medrash. There's more to be said, obviously. Let that be a plug again for starting at 10:30, so we could do that better. Yeah, there's a lot more to be said. I'm going to send out, I think, this week's Toronto Torah. I actually wrote the Parsha article on this, so I will be there to send it out so you can see the summary there, because I realize that we ran through some of this a little quickly. But hopefully the article will help as well.
So quick question. Yeah. So Yaakov and his immediate close family, they live in the full of Torah Kula.
Yes. That's what it looks like to me.
Thank you very much.